Today on The Grave Talks, Demon in the Crawl Space. When it comes to investigating the paranormal, the team of Brian, Robert, and Jeff of PD Paranormal have pretty much seen it all over the last 20-some years. From a man whose home was infested with a demonic force after playing with a Ouija board, also a school that encouraged bullying and harmful behavior, then turned to an asylum that housed tortured souls for decades, and much more. Today, we hear about their drive to find answers about why the supernatural still seem to live among us.
I started back when I was probably in grade school. I mean, I'd find myself going to the library and finding books just on ghost stuff. Back then, they didn't really have a lot. You'd find books like from, I think it was Nancy Robert, Hauntings of North Carolina, different things on ghosts. And I'd read on to that, and it sparked my interest. And then, you know, like I said, when I got older, my grandfather had passed away, and I was sitting down in the living room and looking up where his chair used to be. My grandmother's dog was there staring. I don't know what it was staring at. And I looked up and seen him staring at me. And then that just got my interest started, wanting to look for answers and find out what's going on.
Interesting. When you went to the library to find those books, what was driving that? Like, where did that interest come from that made you go, I want to find ghost books?
I have no clue. I was always drawn to it. It's like I was drawn to this field for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of there. How about you other guys? We got Robert and Jeff with us also on the show today. Robert?
Well, mine started very early. My grandparents lived in a home that a lot of things happened and we couldn't ever explain. And then my uncle had moved into an old farmhouse up in way out in the country. I mean, way out there. And we started having a lot of experiences there of doors opening. You shut a cabinet and turn around and pour you something to drink. When you turn around, the cabinet's back open and you try to recreate it and you couldn't. It didn't make sense. And then one night, you know, we were just sitting around watching TV and things started happening. And I was very, very young and it sparked my interest. So I started doing a little research. You know, back then they wouldn't have such thing as internet or anything like that. So my research, of course, led me to the library and talking to older people and, you know, even going talking to preachers and pastors and different people like that. And next thing I know, you know, I got a flashlight and an old timey cell phone that the camera didn't even half work on. And I catch myself up in the middle of the night trying to film stuff and catch stuff.
With very grainy pixelated photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. I remember the first camera phone. Yeah, it wasn't great. So you were in this cabin and things started happening and you were very young. What was, you know, obviously you being very young, I'm assuming you weren't in the cabin by yourself. What was the reaction of your family and those around you when these things were happening?
Well, most of the time it was me and my little cousins and my uncle most of the time. But I mean, like you sitting there watching TV and my aunt had worked third shift. So the bedroom that she stayed in did not have a door. So she would take like a blanket and hang it over the door. And we'd be sitting there watching TV and all of a sudden you see this blanket just lift up like somebody walks out of it and then drop back down, but nobody would be there.
Almost like a classic, you know, like it's almost like out of a cartoon where exactly. the blanket and then it. So what's the reaction of yourself and those around you when this happens? Because obviously that's a pretty clear cut. You know, unless David Copperfield is visiting for the weekend, it's got to be something going on.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, my uncle, he was the biggest skeptic I've ever known, and he actually seen it happen, and he would just look at us and smile and keep watching TV like it wasn't anything. And then you know, one of my little cousins, she would be freaking out like, "Oh my God!" And then me and my other little cousin, we were so fascinated by it, you know. I was never scared by it. I was just fascinated. And I wanted to know how, what, who, why, where, when, and that's what perked my interest.
Sure, and that makes you wonder. And it's just at that point, after you had that experience, was it just kind of accepted that, look, there's ghosts. We've experienced this. You're kind of operating from that, not necessarily to prove that it exists, but was it more so, what is it and how is this happening?
That's exactly right. And then it started getting into the point, not long after that, we lost one of our grandparents. And I'm like, well, you know, if these other spirits can be here and walk through curtains and stuff, then what do I got to do to try to contact her? And that's where it started with my ITC research and building equipment. Cause I was a kid, man. I didn't have no money. I couldn't just go out and buy equipment. So I started researching and practicing and taking ham radios and CB radios and converting them and starting ITC research on it. And I've been doing that for 27 years now.
How interesting. Jeff, how about you? Where did everything kind of start out for you? What was your interest, or where did that begin?
Well, back when I was little, used to watch on TV and used to sneak up at night because mom and them made me go to bed. And I used to watch it on TV. I was like, man, I always want to do that. And I had an opportunity to do it because me and Rob were actually cousins, and he got me into it, and I didn't believe in it as far as to I saw it. And when I went with him on investigation, and I was like, wow, I'm hooked.
So you just kind of got into it that way. And then what about the investigation made you hooked? Was it the atmosphere? Did something happen? What occurred?
We went to St. Albans, and all the stuff at St. Albans happened, and I was like, wow.
At St. Albans, the first time he was there, he had some really good experiences. We were getting straight up sentences coming through the ITC box. It was not just words. So that kind of blew his mind. And then we actually got a we actually got a couple pictures of stuff that we cannot explain. And just the feeling that was there. We had some guest investigators with us from Paraflix, Our Haunted Lives. And he actually got to see the guy going up the stairs, and they heard this big growl. I mean, it was really loud. And he seen the guy run out of the place. So yeah, he had some really good experiences for his first investigation.
Jeff, when you heard that big growl on your first investigation, did you start to have second thoughts at all? Were you kind of like, well, this is neat, but growling is usually a sign of danger?
Yeah, actually, it was like I was shocked, and then, but it made me want to go up to try to figure out what it was, you mm-hmm. know, and try to debunk it, but couldn't debunk it because it wasn't there to debunk.
Sure. No, yeah, no, exactly. Give me, whoever thinks they know the history best for the audience, you know, what is the history of St. Albans from when it was a working, you know, facility to the state it became in today?
St. Albans, it started out as a all-boys school. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, it's in Radford, Virginia. And when it was an all-boys school, they were very big on athletics. I mean, and they were really good. And it got to the point to where bullying was encouraged there to try to toughen these kids up to make their sports teams better. Mm-hmm. And it got really, really bad. The bullying got bad. I mean, to the point to where you had kids that was actually committing suicide and stuff. And they eventually turned it. They closed it. They closed the boys' school out because it got just that bad there. And after the school was shut down, it reopened in 1916 as a psychiatric infirmary. It was supposed to be an alternative to the other asylums scattered throughout the United States. And, you know, it was a little different. Like, they had a rooftop garden, a bowling alley in the bottom. They even had a small farm. But I'm going to be honest with you, man. It whenever it turned into the sanatorium, it got really, really bad then, because they started doing electroshock therapy and stuff like this. And they were really, really mean to the patients, trying to figure out how to cure, you know, like craziness and stuff. And a lot of people died in that place. A lot of people just they went through some very traumatic experiences in there and a lot of death in there.
How interesting. I mean, it's one of those places where, I mean, it's obviously there's a lot of negativity from the time when it was the boys' school. And
that's exactly right.
And all of that. So you already kind of got a template and a starting point that's pretty dark. And then you converted over to this. And it almost sounds like initially there was somebody in that mix that was trying to be a positive force with the gardens and the bowling alley and things like that. But it sounds like at some point that, you know, kind of got overshadowed and it turned very dark. Do we know why it turned so dark? Was it just the means of the time, and that's just kind of the direction a lot of those places went? Or was there a force there?
I think it was the means of the time, because they were trying their best to figure out, you know, how to help people that's having mental problems. And, you know, they were doing like the ice baths and electroshock, and they were trying to do anything they could to help. But what I don't know if they actually realized they were hurting them more than they were helping.
Yeah. It makes you wonder when you look back on this, and that the techniques that were tried repeatedly everywhere. Usually when you're doing something repeatedly, it's because it produced results at some place or, you know, there's something, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. When you look back at some of these techniques, none of these things would help anyone that has a mental illness or anything of that nature. It just makes me wonder, why did these things keep getting repeated over and over, where clearly there's no productive results out of it?
That's exactly right. And then you got people that's dying. I mean, you know, it's just like the story of, I think her name was Rebecca. Ain't that her name, Brian?
Yeah, Rebecca.
You know, she was actually raped by one of the, I guess you'd call them, workers there.
Yeah.
And, you know, she lost a kid. She had it in her room. Nobody knew about it. She put it in a jar and dug out the wall and had it hid in the wall. And every night when everybody go to bed, she'd pull it out and rock it in her rocking chair. And it was a bad situation. And then they found out about it. They come in and they took the jar from her that had the baby in it. And when they took it away from her, she went crazy and she went into the bathroom and she just hung herself. And we've actually ran into her spirit there. She still remains there.
What was your experience in running into her?
Well, the first time we went there, I'll let Brian talk about that, because he had the best experience out of all of them.
Go ahead, Brian.
Tell him about what happened with you and Rebecca.
Yeah, well, the first time that we was there, it felt like something was following me around the whole time I was there. I was feeling emotional the whole time. And I really, that first time that we knew nothing about Rebecca, and we put it two together now, what happened to me. And you know, I'd walk around, feel like my neck was hurting, like it was sore for some reason. And by that time, I said, I would go upstairs and you know, see what was going on. Before I even went up there, I was downstairs in tears, crying my eyes out. I already knew what happened before I got up there. But I didn't really know what was going on. This really never happened to me before. And to come to find out, you know, she was letting me feel how she felt at the moment then when she hung herself. And that's why my neck was hurting so bad.
And the funny thing about it is, before we even knew the story of Rebecca, he was telling me that somebody took her child away from her and she killed herself. And then whenever we go talk to the owner of the location and they tell us this story, we're like, wow, that's amazing.
Brian, have you ever had an experience like that prior where you, I like to call them downloads almost of information, where it's just suddenly there, where you got overwhelmed by that feeling, you were crying your eyes out, but you had this knowledge. I mean, I've never experienced that. I'm just trying to understand what that must be like. What was going through your mind, and was this a first experience of that nature?
I thought I was had a gift, but never really hit me till I got there, and that's when it kind of opened my eyes and started working. I mean, it was just stuff like flashing in my head. It's like she was talking to me, and it was a weird feeling, but and again, it was pretty cool.
Are you wondering when this is happening? Like, is this all in my mind? You know, because obviously when you're in a setting like that, your mind can wander. You, I mean, just the aesthetics of the place could make one, you know, start to, well, what about this? What about that? Were you wondering, like, is this just, you know, my mind running places? Or did you really feel like right away, like, no, this is something?
Right. I could feel something right then. I've never felt that way before. The emotions was running through my body and mm-hmm. what I was hearing and what I was feeling. I said, man, you know, something's going on here. This is not normal, but there's something that's going on.
How did it dissipate? How did it end? Was it like a slowly kind of faded away, or was it like a gone?
Oh, when I went upstairs and sat down in a room by myself and kind of tried to talk to them and see what was going on, mm-hmm. probably about an hour or two after that, it kind of dissipated. When I went outside, and, you know, just chilled out for a minute and got out the location for a few minutes, smoked a cigarette, you know, kind of wore off then.
So after you take a little bit of time to kind of, you know, think about what happened and kind of ruminate on it for a little bit, and you get it confirmed by the people who run the place, and they're like, yeah, that's the story. What, I mean, you get it confirmed. What, how are you processing this? Cause that's a big one to kind of, to process.
I was sort of like, holy shit. I mean, did I just like have jump in my body and let me feel what they felt and what was going on?
Yeah.
Experience it for myself. I'm like, this is crazy.
But the good thing about it is too, that I believe wholeheartedly that was Brian's awakening moment as far as his ability. And ever since that, he's been way more sensitive to things on every investigation that we've done. And I mean, we've done thousands of investigations in 27 years, but ever since that day, he's been a lot more sensitive of picking up, you know, when things are good and when things are bad. So it's been a blessing to him.
Sure. Is it for you, Brian, yourself, is it a blessing or a curse? Because, you know, sometimes it can be, it works for great, good when you're in an investigation, but I can see sometimes where you just almost, you would probably want to turn it off to get some escapism or peace.
I think it's like a blessing and a curse. It seems like that I got stuck with the light and the dark side of it because, mm-hmm. you know, that's not the first time it's happened to me at St. Albans. We was there, I think maybe our second time there. There's this entity there they call Goatman, some call it Red Eyes. They don't know what it is, but we had a guest with us and was upstairs in the hallway. I could see him darting back and forth, the shadow of it. And then and the woman was had a cane, and like it's about to dart towards her, so I stepped out in front of her. And before I realized what was going on, it was already up on me, went straight through me, and knocked the wind out of me, had me on the ground.
Oh, wow.
And ever since then, that when we go to that entity there, they call the Goat Man, he does not bother me, or not even, he doesn't even come around when I'm there. It's like after that's happened, I can pick up on more of the negative stuff now. When we go to a case and there's something negative, some evil there, I can pick up on it, have that feeling, tell the guys, hey, watch out, something's about to go down. And sure enough, after that, it goes down.
When you have something like that, something kind of nicknamed the Goat Man, and it feels very negative, what do you think it is that you're dealing with?
It could be demonic, but we don't like to deem stuff demonic all the time. We mm-hmm. like to say it's more like an angry spirit.
Yeah.
But with that one, nobody knows where it come from or anything. And everybody has actually seen it, has pictures in that one. It kind of looks like a tall, muscular man with a goat head. And you go down towards the bottom and the pictures, the shadow, you can see like the legs going down and bending back.
Why do you think something like that? And again, I agree, there's far too much throwing a word demonic around, but when you have something like that, why is it there? And how did something like that get there? This is just an opinion-based question.
I have no clue, but, you know, how that would go. I think, you know, a lot of teams go in there. It could be something that another team person come in, or they could have done something in there they shouldn't have done, like a ritual or something. Mm-hmm. You know, tried to Ouija board and brought something in that wasn't even supposed to be there and never closed the door on a session or something. That could possibly what brought that there.
Do you think locations like that today, with this advent in the last, you know, 10 years of so many places saying, yeah, hey, come on in. If you're a paranormal investigator, you know, you pay a fee, come in, investigate, and the place is yours. And, you know, I know a lot of places have, you know, standards or, you know, please don't do this, please don't do that, but it's not always followed. When we have so many people coming and going, are these places becoming more dangerous than they were before they became investigation hotspots?
It's hard to say. Sometimes we've been to St. Albans and it's been like peaceful. Sometimes you go there and it's like there's something different there and it's more aggressive than it usually is. It just depends on, I guess, who goes in, what energy they bring in. If they come in, you know, happy and having a good time, they're going to have positive reaction. They're going there, you know, gung-ho, being all mad and puss-faced, you know, it's going to bring out, you know, the negative part side of it.
And I agree with that 100%. If you go into an investigation cheerful and happy, you know, the spirits are going to feed off of that energy. And I don't believe, I believe that they'll, you know, be happy themselves.
So it's not like you go in, you're all happy and you're positive. I guess if I were a ghost and I had that sort of disposition, I don't know that I'd be happy. I think I would be trying to chip away at that happiness, because that seems to be kind of the disposition of a lot of people too, where there's almost that envy that people have of others who are in a better place than they're at. It can being happy and positive. I understand, you know, a positive does attract positive, negative attracts negative. But if you're dealing with just a cantankerous spirit that, you know, in life would have been that asshole that wants to tear down somebody who has happiness going on in their life, does that also make you a target for something darker that's going to be like, I'm going to take that happiness from you?
Yeah. And sometimes that's absolutely the truth. But, you know, when you go to these places, you got some people that come in there that go in and they're, I guess you'd say, they're hateful and demanding, mm-hmm. and they're pushy when they're asked their questions. They're not showing respect.
Yeah.
That then, yes, I say that these spirits are going to get pissed and they're going to try to do things to scare you out of there. But, you know, it just depends on the demeanor of you. I mean,
sure.
Like when we're investigating, say nothing's happening, we're not catching anything.
Yeah.
We stop and we're standing around and we're talking and joking and laughing and cutting the fool. That's when we catch our best evidence.
Yeah. It's attracting the good spirits, the ones that are there that wouldn't want to be yelled at, that wouldn't want to be treated like dirt, you know, if you will. So it, basically, if you go into something with negative, being demanding and taking that style, you have a much more likelihood of getting something negative than going in being positive.
That's right. I mean, I don't believe in going in there and taunting spirits.
Sure.
But usually here lately, though, if it's something negative, it always comes out towards me for some reason. But I'll pick it up and it comes straight towards me and try to challenge me.
I believe that's just part of your sensitivity, too.
Yeah.
You know, because you can feel things and sense things that, you know, the normal person can't. And they know that they can get a rile out of you, that you can physically see them or sense them. So that's what makes them lead to you.
Has that ability improved for you over the years? Has it gotten stronger, would you say? Or is it you're just more understanding of that it exists, and the more you kind of recognize that, the more you learn about it, the more you're in tune with what's going on?
It's getting stronger. It's like I said, it's more strong. I've been getting more in tune with it now. It's at the point now, if we got like, you know, something bad, what it is, they've already nicknamed it. Every time we catch a EVP or something, they're going to walk in, they'll be like, oh shit, it's the Reaper.
How about when you're not on an investigation? Have you ever had any experiences where you're just, I don't know, walking around a Walmart that was put on an old graveyard or something, you know, just something in general where you're just living life, you're doing normal things outside of investigations? Have you ever had an experience where that's really ticked up and you went, there's something, you know, weird going on here?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I work for Spectrum, so I do cable for them. I'm in and out of houses all the time.
Yeah.
When I'm working houses, I can like feel something staring at me and looking at me and say, yeah, I know you're there, what you want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of weird, though, and people looking like I'm crazy. I'm starting looking, they're like, okay, you hear something, or you know something's here, don't you? But they're scared to say something to me about it.
Sure.
You know, I'm picking up on it.
Do you pick up on it on the living as well, on like the energy of a person? Have you ever, obviously you go in and out of a lot of people's homes, so you interact with probably just a random slice of society. Have you ever been in a situation where you knew, you know, like, you know it, but you can't say it and you can't prove it, but you know there's something really dark and negative about somebody?
Yeah, I can look at them and tell and feel the vibe. I kind of look at their eyes and tell, say, this dude, there's something up with this dude. He's sketchy, something wrong with him, something ain't right.
That can be a good thing, I would think. Go ahead.
Yeah, it works out really good whenever we're doing interviews for team members.
Sure. Oh, my bad. Yeah, understanding someone's intent and such. In all the years of doing this, have you guys ever, and we're going to throw out the demon word here, have you ever had an experience where you just walked away going, I know this is something demonic. This is not just a cantankerous, angry spirit, or was once a person that was an angry, cantankerous person, but this is something that is truly very dark. Other than the goat type character at St. Albans, have you ever had anything like that?
Yeah, we had one case that called in up in Taylorsville, North Carolina, and the gentleman, he was having tons and tons and tons of paranormal experiences. And when he called us, he told us that he had went to the doctor. Now, you're talking about a healthy man, nothing wrong with. He got sick. When he went to the doctor, they told him he had some kind of blood disorder, and they gave him 6 months to live. And when he called us, he said, I don't understand it. And he said, a lot of things is happening. I'm seeing things. I'm hearing things. So we pack up and we go driving 4 hours to get to him, and we get there. Well, when we get there, we find out, oh, he's been doing Ouija boards and table tipping and all these other things. And we get to investigating, and we finally figure out, you know, there is something there. Me and Brian go down in the basement, and we're asking questions, and then all of a sudden you smell the sourest freaking smell that you could ever smell. I mean, the only way I can explain it is if you take a couple dozen eggs and you put them outside and you leave them in direct sunlight for 2 weeks, that's the kind of smell it was. Really, really bad sulfurous smell. And, you know, theory says demons put off that kind of scent, but, mm-hmm. you know, we're not ones to jump to conclusion by no means.
He could be collecting eggs.
That's it. And when we got in there and we got to doing our investigations, all of a sudden my neck got on fire, and I got to looking, and I had them to check back of my neck, and I had got 3 scratches going down the back side of my neck. And next thing I know, Brian's in the corner back there walking around trying to get to the like a corridor space that was in the basement. And then he said something, and I go over there with my light, and he's got 3 scratches going down his neck in the exact same place.
What are you thinking at that point? When I mean, that's obviously, that's scary. That's you know, something physically is happening to you, and you're taking in all this information at once of what this guy has been up to. How did you proceed?
Well, first thing I did, you know, and of course on an investigation like that, first off, you smell the smell, your mind's going to start playing tricks on you, because your first thought's like, is this really demonic? Mm-hmm. And then you get scratched and it's in threes, you know, it comes in threes. So all these signs are leading to it, but in your mind you're like, nah, can't be. 1,000 investigations, there's no way.
Yeah.
But then you come to find out it is. I mean, we get over to the backside where the crawl space was, where we were trying to get to begin with, and you can see this shadow of this Joker standing in that crawl space, and it was not human. I mean, honestly, we physically seen it. It was not human. There, unless a human can trans shape or whatever, it was not human. And the feeling got real. I mean, your hair started standing up on your neck. You started feeling sick just by looking at it. So, you know, the only thing we could do was go into the defense mode. So I started praying. Brian started burning Paleo Santos, our medium behind us. She had a whole log of sage burning. I mean, and man, I prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed, and I threw everything I had at this Joker. And it took us about an hour and a half, and then it's like it just disappeared, like gone. So we went through the house and we did a blessing on the house, and we tried to capture more evidence, but nothing else happened after that. Mm-hmm. So we packed up and we left. And about 2 weeks later, we got a call back from this gentleman. He went to the doctor for his checkup, and the blood disorder's gone. He's not sick no more. He went back to work.
Oh my God.
And he's still living to this day. He is doing great. We still stay in contact with him.
When you were going through the house and he's telling you, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, was he oblivious, or did he suspect that what he had been dabbling in was the cause of what was ailing him?
he knew it was his fault. He knew that he opened some kind of portal, per se, to invite this thing in there, and he did not know how to get rid of it.
Was he doing it just kind of out of curiosity?
Well, he said that it was something that him and his family had did a long time ago as friends, you know, as friends get together, and they would play with a Ouija board because it was cool, or they would do the table tipping because it was cool.
Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, it becomes, we did this as kids, and what's the harm? You know, I'm still here. Everybody's
not knowing the circumstances of what they were doing. And that's just like we tell everybody, man. If you don't know what you're doing, please do not mess with that stuff.
Sure.
If you don't know what you're doing on an investigation, please do not go try to investigate. Make sure you're with somebody who has an understanding of what to do.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with the team of Robert, Brian, and Jeff. In part two, what's the difference between inviting things in and asking questions through a spirit box? Has any member of the team ever had an attachment follow them home? And how often do people die, indirectly or directly, because of paranormal activity? Those questions and more in part two. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.